Come one, come all to Big News Wednesday. We're back, and so is the news. I'm John Arula. JR Jackson, thank you for being here.
Barely, I must say, but yes, here.
You are here, you're in your studio. We had a little bit of tech problems behind the scenes. I'm actually hearing a little bit of static or background noise. I'm not sure what's going on. Anyway, yeah. It's chaos here in the studio. But the only reason that we do that is that we accurately reflect the experience most people are having across America, where it is utter chaos. Anyway, we do have a lot of news that we're talking about today. So thank you, JR, for joining us. Thank you, everyone out there, for joining us. If you'd like to help other people join us, then what you can do is hit the like button if you're on a platform where that's possible, or share the stream if you like. And I know some of you are thinking, I'm not on one of those dumb video things. I listen to podcasts like a civilized person, and I respect that. Now, please go rate and review us on Apple Podcasts, because that would also help out in the future. Anyway, with all that said, we got a lot that we're gonna be talking about. Weird communications strategy drums coming from the Fulton County investigation of Donald Trump in the 2020 election that I don't fully understand. We're gonna try to figure it out. Marjorie Greene has decided that it would be a little bit easier for Republicans to win elections if Democrats were legally barred from voting. So we're gonna evaluate that as a strategy for democracy going forward. We've got a new presidential contender. We got the CEO of Norfolk Southern being interviewed. And in the full show, if you're watching the aftermath, Fox News anchor fact checked in real time on crime, which is hilarious. And we do have animal news. So I know a lot of you out there are terrified, not of things like income inequality and being able to retire and everything, but super pigs. And we have heard your fear. We will be discussing them at the close of the show. So in advance of all of that, if you wanna hit us up on Twitter, super chats, Twitch comments, whatever you want, you can send in your comments, insightful comments perhaps, questions, maybe something funny, and you might get a chance at a $100 Blue Apron gift card in doing so. With all that said, JR Jackson, you ready to discuss these newses?
John, I'm ready. I'm not sure if you are. You got the hoodie, but you forgot the hat, bro. Come on, bro.
I need a hat.
It's a theme. It's a theme. Oh, yeah, that's right. No, you need the dad hat. What's it called? You were going to get the.
Let's talk about the news.
I already regret saying anything.
You know, I do, though, think sometimes I do impersonations of rich people, and I don't think I can really sell it because I've never been rich, but I do think I would buy me as an industrialist, perhaps a man of capital. In this hat, I feel like I can speak to the travails of the top 0.1%. Anyway,
I think so. You need a cane. That's all that's left.
I'll get there someday. Anyway, with that said, let's jump into this.
In your view, people will not be surprised when they see the list of names to come out who you recommended to face indictment.
Especially if they've been following the investigation, I can't see it being a shocker.
Okay, that's dramatic. That's Kate Baldwin, CNN's out front anchor, talking to the foreperson of the grand jury of Fulton County investigating Donald Trump and his cronies, possible crimes around the 2020 election, Emily Kors. And she just said something dramatic. If you've been following, you're not gonna be surprised. And then I realized, wait, but I also don't expect there to be justice. So is that good news or is that bad news? Thankfully, Kate Baldwin has a follow-up question. Let's see if we can figure out what she meant.
When you say there's no plot twists and people won't be shocked, people are gonna hear that and they're gonna think that means that Donald Trump is definitely on that list. I know it's delicate, but can you speak to that?
I can't. Well, I might be able to according to instructions, but I don't want to. I don't want to speak out on something that the judge, like I said, consciously chose not to release at this point.
So I don't know what you mean, because Kate Baldwin interpreted it as if you wouldn't be surprised because obviously Donald Trump should be indicted, so he will be. So wait, you're saying that he will be indicted, but many people, probably the majority of the people watching this video right now, don't expect him to be indicted. So our surprises work in very different directions. And insult to injury, Emily Kors there says, probably could tell you, but I don't want to. Then why are you on the news? Anyway, JR, what do you take away from what
that
you
was
just saw?
Definitely the only, first and only question I had. Well, what are you doing here? There's a process probably when you're going to get someone to be on the show. You have some inside information to say about this particular trial, considering you have this type of position on it. Would you like to come on the show? Yes. But what was in her mind in accepting that invitation? I'm going to go on and not say anything. Did she accept and then later realize what she may have to talk about? And then she realized she didn't want to. Did a friend whisper in her ear and be like, you know, maybe you shouldn't do that after you've already accepted that invitation. But then again, it's still on TV. I don't know. I don't think she knows. If you can ask her directly, which she was asked directly.
She was asked directly multiple times. So by the way, I'm not saying that like Emily Kors is like the bad here or whatever, although we'll discuss that. Mainly because while what she said was, I think I probably can, but I won't. I would guess, this is just me hazarding a guess, and I'm not an expert. I don't think she's supposed to. She probably shouldn't. So my guess would be that she's getting a little bit ahead of what they would find to be acceptable. I don't think if it was up to her to just drop the bombshell, then they would just release it. Why would they be retaining the information and then just waiting to see if she decides to say it if she goes on Rachel Maddow? I don't think that's how the system actually works. The more important point though is we get left in the same sort of situation where we were at like 5 days ago when it was announced that there was a recommendation from the grand jury, which by the way is like an investigatory grand jury. It's not like the final charging grand jury. So bear that in mind. This is a complex process and we're trying to keep up with it. In that it looks like there will be indictments. But one could also interpret what she said as, well, if you've been following and you know about some of the other like minor villains of this story that were involved in what was going on in Georgia, then I guess you wouldn't be surprised that they might be indicted, or that even, you know, we have reason to believe that Lindsey Graham might have perjured himself. I guess I wouldn't be shocked then if he was indicted because he's not the president. It's a little bit easier. So anyway, I don't know how much additional information is coming out from what she said. She seems very cocky about the process. And if you watch the full interview, she certainly seems like she wants Trump to be indicted. So if you, dear viewer, want to draw from this a little bit of hope, I think she's left you room for that.
I think she's gotten the attention. I mean, again, like you said, she's not the villain in this story. There maybe isn't one outside of the folks that are potentially getting indicted. But it's like it seems like she's enjoying it a bit, you know, reveling in the attention.
Yes.
Like, maybe I do and maybe I don't. It's like almost a reality TV show audition here, where maybe I can get enough attention. My name will be spread around enough that maybe they'll put me on an episode of Big Brother. I don't know. Actually, I don't know if Big Brother's still on. Survivor, whichever one of those shows has been on since 1997, I can't remember.
Yeah, exactly. Law and Order. but anyway, that's speculation. I don't know. I can't be sure. But yeah, she seemed a bit giddy, you know. And we'll talk more about this later. But she had like me having a good excuse to mock Donald Trump's voice energy is how I would interpret that. In any event, I do want to get to one other fun little bit of this, and you'll really read the joy from her in this. Take a look at this question that Kate Baldwin sends her way.
Donald Trump put out a statement last week about the partial report that the judge did release, the pages that he did. And the way that he described it is he said that yet your report means total exoneration for him is how he put it in his statement. What's your reaction to that, Emily?
I did see that today, which was fascinating. I'm not positive he read the right document. But I will say that if what he was talking about was our statement where we indicated that there was no evidence of widespread fraud or widespread vote fraud in the Georgia 2020 election, that might have been what he meant. Other than that, I'm not positive what he meant by that. I'd be interested to know.
Okay, so the foreperson of the grand jury is having a little bit of fun there. And I know that not only because as we cut away from the video, she flashed a bigger grin than I've literally ever had in my face in my entire life. Because like you could interpret his tweet, which by the way read, thank you to the special grand jury in the great state of Georgia for your capital P patriotism and capital C courage, total exoneration. The USA is very proud of you. One could interpret that Well, he obviously doesn't mean exoneration of him or his side, because they said that they perjured themselves and there are probably indictments coming. So they did also point out that there was no appearance of voter fraud, certainly no voter fraud that would change the results of the election. So I guess the election system of Georgia has been totally exonerated. Those who were accused of manipulating the vote, the people of Fulton County in particular, who were accused of it. I would say black voters generally who were accused of having stolen the election in that state. I suppose they've all been totally exonerated. Maybe Donald Trump is just being magnanimous in defeat. What do you think, JR?
The only thing I can think of is this is one of those ploys where he's looking to convince people of the opposite of the reality, which is his go-to and everything. But maybe as he's seeing, you know, these potential indictments coming down, and maybe he's involved in it, maybe someone close to him is involved with it, but we would say it's just him because that's the only person he thinks about. It's one of those things where it's like a preemptive strike to go and tell his MAGA supporters that, you know, they've totally exonerated me. So then once, if it does come down, his name is on this list, they're like, look at these lies from the fake news or something. I'm not sure how this is supposed to work, that maybe the indictments are fake. Either way it goes, whatever it is that's against his perceived reality to his people, it's gonna be deemed as fake no matter what. Well, yeah. Donald Trump already truthed out that he's been totally exonerated. So these indictments and potentially everything else that's coming down is fake because he is God. That's the only thing left, and that doesn't make any sense though.
Yeah, it's like you know how people criticize like the newest Marvel movies for sticking to the formula. This is just no collusion again. This is just, you know, forget what that lying report says. I like the idea that exonerate. It's a perfect call. Many people were on it, and none of them hung up. So I guess I'm innocent. It didn't say that. Isn't it amazing though that the fact that they came out, it's not amazing, spoiler alert, that it came out that there was no voter fraud at all? Like, right wing media weirdly not interested in that, considering their interest in the general topic of voter fraud over the past couple of years. They didn't seem particularly interested. In the same way that Fox didn't seem super interested in these reports that they'd been fundamentally lying about all of this for the past couple of years. I guess they just couldn't fit it into their rundown. And I understand that, after all, they're only a 24-hour-a-day news network. Anyway, with that said, there is, I think, it's been lurking in the background of our conversation thus far. There's an important question here, which is, should the foreperson of the Fulton County grand jury be doing media appearances and making these bold, giddy claims about Donald Trump and indictments and all that? Now, I was suspecting that it's not just us, people who do these sorts of interviews quite a bit are feeling apparently the same way. Here's Anderson Cooper.
First of all, why this person is talking on TV, I do not understand. She's clearly enjoying herself.
Yeah.
But I mean, is this responsible? She was the foreperson of this grand jury.
This is a horrible idea, and I guarantee you that prosecutors are wincing watching her go on this.
I was wincing just watching her eagerness to, like, you know, hint at stuff.
It's painful in that respect. This is a very serious prospect here. We're talking about indicting any person. You're talking about potentially taking away that person's liberty. We're talking about potentially a former president for the first time in this nation's history. She does not seem to be taking that very seriously.
There's no reason for her to be out talking.
No, I
mean,
it's okay. A prosecutor's nightmare.
Okay, so this is, to be clear, this is not normally done. I want to be very clear about that. So I understand that if you think the fact that, and in the extended interview, this is very clear, she talks about them talking about Trump, like, you know, behind the scenes and all that. And it becomes very clear to me, I think, and I don't know why I would be biased in this direction, that they weren't necessarily generally huge fans of Donald Trump or his claims of voter fraud. And regardless of whether you think that's true, it definitely is something that the other side will now claim. So, well, look, I think that we can critique the way that she's communicated around this, the fact that she seems to be having so much fun with that. That is largely irrelevant. Her presence on the media at all is atypical, and we are already very much in a case where everybody's super gun shy about any charges coming at Donald Trump. So, because we've been put in this difficult position, if you want justice, apparently we need to play this perfectly for any chance at justice. This seems like a massive gift to the other side to claim that there was malice against Donald Trump, that you can't, like, that's what the other side is going to do legally. So that's my fear, JR. What do you think about
that? It seems that way, but this is the thing though. It's a bit of an indictment of the way media and journalism works, especially lately with the quickness in which we can get things. Everyone's looking to get it first. So yeah, sure. I guess was it CNN in this particular instance was looking for some kind of insight into this. These potential indictments and charges without thinking, do we need it? Do we want it? Do we want to announce this beforehand? Is this something that's responsible to do? And also, I guess the woman that was doing it wasn't getting enough counsel around whether or not she should do this. And maybe she was starting to get those notices in her head, like maybe this is a bad situation. This could be a problem. But in whoever's interviewing, looking to get that scoop first, they forget that the whole point here is there's a legal process going on. Mm-hmm. And so with forgetting about that part because they need to go ahead and make that money and say, we're number one in doing it, that becomes the thing rather than the legal process for it actually happening the way it should. And maybe they overlooked how much that could damage things, which is a huge indictment on the way that we feel we have to get these things out.
Well, and by the way, in one of the videos we played earlier on the show, she acknowledged the fact that certain things she could say could interfere with ongoing communications. Mm-hmm. That's why she said, I could maybe tell you if Donald Trump will be, but I'm not going to because there's these other investigations. That's good. I'm glad that you acknowledged that. But you could also consider the possibility that you being on CNN at all could be. And again, this is exactly as JR said. None of this objectively has to be a problem, but we are not in charge of the system. I'm not in charge of the media. I'm not in charge of the justice system. We have to interpret from our experience what we know about the way these things play out. And not only the objective influences that should go into whether there's an indictment, but all of the weird interpretation and motive stuff. It sucks. I hate it. But that's the way it works. Yeah. And it does seem like it's going to be very easy for them to use this. Maybe in the end it won't matter. Maybe the lies that they have apparently discovered in this investigation are so clear, so unacceptable, that there need to be charges. And I would throw out one possibility is, Donald Trump calling them and saying, I need you to find me 11,603 votes so that I can win this thing. Maybe that's a bad thing. Maybe that's even a crime. But anyway, I'm just a little bit worried over the process.
It's all scary ground because you don't know exactly what could derail or even force people to believe that this is all, made up.
Can you imagine if Hunter Biden was caught on tape saying, my daddy just needs 7,000 votes. Come on, give them to me. I don't think they would think that was cool. But anyway, fingers crossed, we'll find out if anything comes out of this. Supposedly, the indictments that are now, I guess, confirmed to be coming will be coming soon. So hopefully we'll know for sure. Anyway, we'll also see if she continues to do media appearances later on today. Don't go on Tucker, please. Bad call. Okay, with that said, we're gonna go to our first break because when we come back, we need to grapple with the newest phase of the Republican war on democracy. It's getting super explicit now. Stick around. Jared, now that we're a few weeks into the new time slot, is everything feeling natural again? Has the show changed at all?
A little bit. There's we have a little more zany things going on there. I guess it's because of the nature of having all day to chew on things. But also, you said we migrated up. It wasn't scary. There's no caravans, but we did migrate to the 2 o'clock specific time over here on the West Coast. And yes, the few of you out here who were bugged by that, I know I'm saying specific time. I know it.
There you go. Yeah, and the new tagline for the show is the 2 p.m. slot where woke goes to die.
Oh, I was told by someone that I'm gonna die alone with no friends or family. I think it's because something that I said on the show about those 10 folks that were murdered in Buffalo by that white supremacist as he was being sentenced. I'm not sure how that connected to me and dying alone and with no friends and family. But I have a feeling that person has none of those things either.
Yeah. Also, you have a family and you have friends. I don't understand that. But super fast. I apologize to the producers. We'll go fast during the next block to make up for it. I received an email. So I have a website, johnnyderola.com. If you've never heard of it, I understand. Anyway, I don't use it for a lot of stuff. It's just like social stuff. Anyway, so I get emails from it. And some of them are perfectly nice. I got an email from someone that, like, there's a thing online where when you tweet at someone, you assume you know everything. You don't need to ask questions or be uncertain or whatever. You know everything. I'm probably even guilty of it. This person assumed more direct knowledge than I have ever seen in anything before. So they had a criticism. They said, John, this was all in deranged language. You don't slow down enough when you introduce the name of a guest. You rush through it on purpose to denigrate the person, which is already a bold claim. First of all, I talk fast all the time. I feel like it's consistent, but that would be fine. Then they said, but thank you for not doing that anymore, which I didn't know that I had changed the rate at which I was saying their names. And then said, because you had a talk with Cenk and he made you change it. What are you talking about? First of all, you're assuming that Cenk has literally ever watched this show or has any idea how I intro the guests. You're also assuming that I changed it based on criticism from Cenk. This is madness. Anyway, Jer Jackson, what do you think about that?
You should hear the things that John calls Cenk behind his back, considering that, you know, he doesn't listen to anything that guy says.
It's just such an amazing assumption of 1,000 facts beyond what you know.
Oh man, that's a deep one. Anyway, man, I've never had that. That's an accomplishment.
It was like a month ago and that still sticks with me. Anyway, okay. With that said, we've got maybe my favorite unfavorite story of the day, which I'm gonna talk about because Anna had a meeting with me and insisted that I do it. So with that said, I'm gonna intro this. Marjorie Greene, like many Republicans, utterly despises democracy, but she does seem to have mustered just enough brain cells to figure out that it would be a lot easier for Republicans to win elections if Democrats were legally barred from voting. It's an amazing plan. We're gonna weigh the merits, starting with this.
And now we've seen a big change in our Georgia elections. We have two Democrat senators representing Georgia and no longer Republican senators. And we are a state that I would say we're a little bit more purple than I like. We've had to fight off Stacey Abrams twice now, even though she still thought she was governor for quite some time. But this is the problems, and I agree with you. And this is a mistake that a lot of Republican states do, is they say, we're going to bring in jobs, we're bringing in business. And then they offer these tax credits to woke industries and woke corporations. And 5 to 10 years down the road, the people that were born and raised there don't recognize their cities, their counties, and their states anymore, because they move into your state and they bring their Democrat votes with them. And I think this is something that, say, if we ended up in a national divorce situation, well, red states could stop that from happening by changing their voting laws and say, we welcome you to live here, but we just don't want you to bring your votes with you for a little while. We want you to learn to and understand why this is the way it is.
Okay, so there's a whole lot of crazy there, but the bottom line is, people move around and sometimes they don't agree with Marjorie Greene. And for that reason and that reason alone, they should be legally barred from voting for 5 years, which is an amazing claim to make. I mean, we could talk again about her obsession now with the national divorce. And by the way, there's this thing where when someone is going through something or gets into something, they make everything about it. Like you might have experienced on the show that I recently started watching wrestling again. So I make a lot of analogies to wrestling. She gets divorced and suddenly everything in politics is about divorce. It's not all about you, Marjorie. Anyway, so there's a lot of issues with her plan. First of all, it is explicitly solely designed to be anti-democratic. And I mean that both capital D and lower D. It's against the concept of democracy. And you'll notice it only is meant to apply to Democratic votes coming into red states. She doesn't even have the minimal savviness to be like, and obviously Democrats could do that to Republicans in blue states. You know, like pretending that that's something that would happen, pretending that this isn't wildly hypocritical. She won't even do that. It's just in these states, red states, we're not gonna let the Democrats vote. And she even undercuts her argument further by whining for 45 seconds straight about the fact that Georgia isn't, in even her mind, a red state anymore. A lot of Democrats have come in, or maybe some of them have started voting, and now it's elected two Democrats, and it went for Joe Biden. So why would you be allowed to ban Democratic votes there? It's not even under your definition of red state. JR, I know there's a lot here, but what do you think?
There's a lot here, just not coming from her brain. That's the whole thing about this. So she's completely missing the possibility, which you pointed out, I think, and as a bit of an aside here, that what's happening in probably some of these states is people are coming of age to vote. And it's obvious that the Republican Party has absolutely no connection to younger generations to a large enough degree to carry their votes, which is why they have these policies that stop college students from voting, registering. They're trying to X out those certain communities and areas where those younger folks vote, in addition to, of course, immigrant communities, black folks, other minorities, to make sure that they don't vote because they don't appeal to them. All their policies are oppressive to all those groups because they only serve a very particular small group of people, as we've already seen. So in order to continue any kind of control, they have to change rules and policies. She's just floating another one here that makes absolutely no sense. This comes after the secession talk, which also makes absolutely no sense because she pointed out how her state is already purple then. So we divide them up amongst states, red and blue states, based off of what? Based off of which election? What if it switches again and the governor of that state is then a blue or red governor and then the legislator there is the opposite party? What sense does that make? How is it a red or a blue state? Maybe the solid ones like the Montanas and Idahos and whatever of the country are the ones that they can solidly say are red. Yeah. Utah being one, it's surrounded by Nevada, California, and all those other blue states. So tell me again how this is supposed to work. It's not supposed to work. This is the whole point about this. She's saying all this and she's doubling down on the secession game, even though people are calling how stupid it is, because she needs the end game of what she says she doesn't want is what's going to lead us to civil war. And what does civil war look like? It's again something else that doesn't make any sense, especially in this day and age of America. What it does lead to is more violent, rabid Marjorie Taylor Greene supporters that are like, I'm going to civil war. They don't know what it looks like. They don't know what it feels like, but they do know they want to start killing people. That's the end game here.
Well, they should read a book or watch a movie because we know what it looks like. People like her so desperately wanted to own slaves that they tried to break apart the country and got their asses kicked. That's what it looks like. But I agree, it's not about actually making this policy. It's not about actually getting the national divorce or whatever, which is why she's not bothering to pretend that there's any constitutional underpinning for any of this. There isn't. She's not pretending that there's any philosophical underpinning for this. Why shouldn't they be allowed to vote? Because she doesn't like their values, their policies. That's it. There's nothing beyond that. She is not even attempting it. It's just designed to push anyone who hears it, who's a Republican, who likes, I don't want to ever have to actually legitimately win an election. I don't want to have our people try to win people over. I just want us to win automatically by default to accept whatever crazy thing comes next. Stop requiring reasons for the ideas that are presented to you. If it feels good, that's reason enough, even if it means shredding the Constitution, destroying the country and all of that.
With the mass exodus of states like California and New York, where people that have lived in these Democrat states all their lives and really just don't know any other way. But then when they move somewhere like Florida or Georgia or Texas or another red state, and they just really, they always love it, and they are just praising how wonderful it is. But yet at election time, they turn around and vote Democrat like they always have. Well, they really are like newcomers ruining our beautiful red states and trying to change the values that we have. And I think a smart thing for Republican states to do would be say, you know what? We love for you to move here. We welcome you to our state. And we, if you like the way it is, we want to keep it that way. So a cooling period would be great. You can still vote in federal elections, but maybe we don't want you to vote in our state elections for a while. And that's something that they could do in a national divorce. I don't know. Give them maybe 5 years, 3 to 5 years to realize and learn why the red states are the way they are. And it's because of Republican votes, not Democrat votes.
Well, I will grant her this. There are some aspects common to a lot of red states that are that way because of prior Republican votes. If you want to look at where some of these states rank in terms of access to healthcare, education, and stuff like that, feel free to own the results in some of your states. But again, there isn't anything approaching a rational thought in any of this. I mean, there's a little bit of like explicit just hatred of blue voters. Come here and work. We want your labor. But we don't care what you think. Again, there's no consistency where like when Florida used to vote blue in presidential elections, then it suddenly became red. Should they have banned Republican votes? There's no consideration of that because again, this isn't intended to attach to any principle or value system or anything like that. Why would these states continue to get more congressional representation as their population goes up if those people aren't allowed to vote anyway? Why are you getting those free seats in Congress if those people are not actual citizens? Have you heard of the concept of taxation without representation? There are a million amazing responses to this, and I feel the need to list all of them because I want to be very clear. Charlie Kirk didn't. Charlie Kirk, who I'm sure considers himself some kind of intellectual, probably would argue that he likes democracy or whatever, had absolutely nothing to say to the concept that states should be deciding who gets to vote and who doesn't. Not for all of the reasons that we've historically done it, which is you live in this zip code, screw you, we're taking all the voting booths out, or I think that historically your race tends to vote for one party rather than another, so we're gonna screw you over. They're so far past that now. It's just Democratic voters. If you came from a place that we think might be Democratic, you don't get to vote. By the way, Ben Shapiro lived in California and then he moved to wherever, good riddance. He shouldn't be able to vote, I guess, because he came from a blue state. How stupid is this?
It's very stupid. It's very on par for Marjorie Taylor Greene, though. It's just the way these things are. Again, you can go through all the intellectual facts and reasons why none of this makes sense. But I mean, whether she knows that or not, it doesn't matter. That's not the point because it can't be implemented. It's actually absolutely impossible. The stupidity is on like such a large scale. It's so big you can't even sift through it anymore. So all that's left is anger, rabid anger and stupidity. And what that leads to is grabbing your guns. That's 100%. All there's left, bro.
Yeah, you know, I do have to say though, like I got all worked up, but now I'm like starting to like the idea because after all, I mean, California is a blue state. No one can doubt that. I mean, it has a way better claim to being a blue state than Georgia does to being a red state. After all, we won the last three Senate races in Georgia, whereas in California, the Democrats always win. So there are these areas of California like Orange County and others that, I don't know, I feel like they're kind of trying to ruin our state. So maybe they could vote in federal elections where it won't matter because the state is blue and their vote, you know, doesn't, it's not gonna change the result. But in local elections, I don't think so. Why should we have Republicans representing any area of California, no matter how wildly conservative? It should go to us. Isn't this a fun game? I mean, it's a game that you play thousands of miles away from the very concept of democracy, but it is fun. It feels good to win automatically, doesn't it? Anyway, I want to turn to this next video because if this was just Marjorie Greene, maybe this wouldn't matter quite a bit. But I want to be clear, it's not just Marjorie Greene. Take a look at this.
Explaining why she thinks this is a good idea. Greene is saying that a national divorce would empower individual states to form a smaller government, reduce the federal debt, set their own environmental standards. And the Congresswoman has another idea as well, banning people who move from blue states to red states from voting for 5 years so they don't bring their bad politics with them. I actually favor that idea.
That's what this is about. This isn't about the kookiest congresswoman liking an idea. This is about the normalization of insanity. This is about pushing the Republican Party fully over the cliff into whatever you want politics. Sean Hannity is not, like, sure, he's crazy, but he has an audience of millions of people and he is considered far more reputable than Marjorie Greene. And now because Marjorie Greene said a crazy thing and he looks out there and sees that a lot of Republicans like it, that's now the position of one of the most watched anchors in American political media. So she, by saying a crazy thing that was probably whispered in her ear by Roger Stone or something, they've now dispensed potentially with decades of, we've run the numbers and certain types of people have ID and others don't. So I guess we like voter ID now, or I guess we're not gonna let you vote on the Sunday before an election. You can't do the early voting then because we ran the numbers and it looks like that's gonna advantage. No, they're done with all of that. One of the most popular hosts in American political media just says Democrats should be barred from voting. And that's thanks to Marjorie Greene. She may be on the fringe, but that only means that the Republican Party is on the fringe.
And as usual, she's the spawn of a Donald Trump, who's of course would say insane things like this as well. But she only gets that legitimacy now that they're beginning to, you know, sour on Trump from people like Kevin McCarthy, who said, "I would never leave that woman's side." And that's part of her strategy in backing him for that House speakership position that he had to go through 25 votes for, because she's like, I need to keep my brand of insanity close to the positions of power. She's at least smart enough to know that part. So when she does things like this, the first question in every question, anytime Kevin McCarthy sticks his California representative face, that blue state, in front of any cameras and podiums, someone should ask him, so are you still backing Marjorie Taylor Greene on these ridiculous proposals? And when he says, I don't know what you're talking about, I haven't heard it, bring back up to him that he's going to be by her side forever. I will never leave that woman's side. You should probably know what your woman's side is saying, that you're never going to leave, Kevin. And every time, Kevin, why is it you want this national divorce? Because you're the woman, you're never going to leave her side, believes in it. And she's on cable news talking about it, talking to Sean Hannity, who, by the way, along with Tucker Carlson and Laura Ingraham and Rupert Murdoch and all of them, have been exposed for piggybacking points like this for ratings and for money. And if they don't, they're afraid their audience is going to run away from them. Everything they say, go back to that. It's based off of lies.
By the way, I'm so glad that you pointed out Kevin McCarthy. Why does he get to be in Congress? Why does he get to bring his bad politics to California? We'll just ban him. Why not? And Marjorie Greene is a big backer of Kevin McCarthy. I wonder what he thinks about her setting up the beginnings of the end of his political career. Anyway, how about this, Kevin McCarthy? We're going to ban you. So you should probably move to a place that will like you more. Except, oops, you'll be coming from a blue state, so you won't be allowed to vote for 5 years. You dummy, you big dumb donkey. Anyway, with that said, there's a little bit of an update when it comes to the presidential race. So let's jump right into this.
We're in the middle of a national identity crisis. Faith, patriotism, and hard work have disappeared, only to be replaced by new secular religions like COVIDism, climatism, and gender ideology. We hunger to be part of something bigger than ourselves, yet we cannot even answer the question of what it means to be an American. Today, the woke left preys on that vacuum. They tell you that your race, your gender, and your sexual orientation govern who you are, what you can achieve, and what you're allowed to think. This is psychological slavery, and that has created a new culture of fear in our country that has completely replaced our culture of free speech in America. And that is why today I am announcing my run for President of the United States.
Yes, dramatic political news today. Vivek Ramaswamy, a multimillionaire entrepreneur, has announced that he would very much like for you to know who he is and maybe buy his book or whatever. The way he worded it was different. He said that he was running for president or something. I guess technically he is, but he's running on the exact same anti-woke agenda and platform that literally every other Republican will. He has absolutely no chance whatsoever, which is why this comes across as so rote and cliched. But he is using this to get in the media. He appeared on Tucker Carlson to agree with everything Tucker Carlson has to say. JR, what do you think? Am I wrong? Is this going to shake up the race?
I heard about this guy announcing like a week ago, and I was thinking the same thing. I was like, should we pay attention to this guy? How far will this go? Or is this just a bit of an attention grab for a few minutes, maybe a couple of weeks worth? It's also pretty early as well, so maybe that's part of the plan here. But if you actually listen to what he's saying, because I think they pitch this to people who don't really listen to what they're saying, because it doesn't make any sense if you listen to what they're saying, as long as you hear the words woke, anti-democratic, these Democrats, and all that stuff, whatever kind of words they want to throw out there that speaks to the minds of these MAGA folks. What he pointed out was they, who's the they, like to say that your race, sexual orientation, et cetera, all determine who you are. Coming from the part of this consistently passing or trying and pushing legislation that's based off people's sexual orientation, where they come from, their race, all that stuff, based off of discriminating against them on those things. Who's the one that's determining laws based off of who someone is and who their sexual orientation is? Who keeps bringing up the fact that someone who puts a pronoun on a social media profile is a problem? They're destroying the fabric of America, groomers. Who's bringing all this stuff all the time, clarifying and trying to put an identity on people based off of the hatred that they have for who they are? But then they'll say they're coming for us. They're saying your identity is based off of this. It keeps spinning people in these circles because they can't keep up with the BS that they've been thrown at them. That's why. And that's the thing. And nobody knows who this guy is. It's all based in the popularity contest of who's the biggest hateful person possible. And he's speaking too long for them.
Yeah, look, I think he's smart enough to know that if he goes on Tucker Carlson and says that the climate isn't changing, if he pretends to be that stupid, that that'll help him out and maybe someone will buy his book or whatever. If he agrees with Tucker Carlson that diversity isn't our strength and buttresses the worldview of millions and millions of some of the most vicious racists in America's history, that that'll help him out. These are all decisions that you could make to raise your profile or whatever. I personally think that it's disgusting. It makes a mockery of what presidential races should be about. The concept that, like what he's known for, he was formerly a biotechnology executive and a hedge fund partner. He's a millionaire now, so should obviously appeal to the populist right wing who hates elites and everything. Isn't that always amazing? They hate the elites, except that every single one of the people they listen to is one of those rich elites. He made a name for himself in right wing circles by opposing corporate efforts to advance political, social, and environmental causes. How is that still a way to make a name for yourself? That's what literally every single one of you does. And what a bold stance. Finally, stopping corporate America, which is just so overboard in fighting for justice and equity. Very, very bold.
He's useful because his name is Vivek Ramaswamy. That's his usefulness. And they know that. So he's like, but there's a brown person saying this now. This is useful. He knows.
I certainly can't speak for everyone. My suspicion would be that that's what Tucker Carlson thinks about it. I don't know. Anyway, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe he'll be our next president. We'll figure it out. By the way, Jeff Testpilot in the YouTube chat says, you go, John. Logic is gonna get you everywhere with MTG. It's a good point and a good burn. You're not wrong. Okay, that said, oh my God. Oh, we're not gonna get to everything. Let's jump into this.
How long will Norfolk Southern maintain a presence in East Palestine?
As long as it takes. Yeah, we're going to see this thing through. That's my commitment to the community of East Palestine.
I wonder who's going to be the one who decides how long it takes in as long as it takes. I suspect him and his board. That's the CEO of Norfolk Southern, Alan Shaw. Of course, they're the company who became famous recently for causing one of the worst environmental disasters in modern American history in East Palestine. Many of the people there to this day, every day, complaining about eyes stinging, headaches, a number of different symptoms. But we keep being told by the company who has a vested interest in you not believing that, that everything's fine. And they've tested the air and they've tested the water and they've tested the soil. Who are you going to believe? The guy whose stock portfolio relies on this or the actual people there? I don't know. I don't have any sort of direct conduit to the truth. I just have suspicions based on my life. In any event, he did actually deign to speak with PBS NewsHour, so that's good. And here's a little bit more about the financial commitment that they have to the people who've been affected.
And that's a down payment. And we're gonna invest in this community for the long haul to help this community recover and help this community thrive.
When you say the $6.5 million is a down payment, as you know, the average income for an East Palestine family is less than $45,000 a year. We've talked to people who say they need Norfolk Southern to pay their medical expenses, to pay their moving expenses, and to pay for independent testing of wells and soil and air. Is that something that you would commit to?
We've stood up a lot of testing within an hour of the derailment. We had air testing. Within a couple hours of the derailment, we've had water testing. There is independent testing going on right now with the Ohio EPA and with local health officials.
Did you notice what happened there? I noticed what happened there. He was asked a question and he answered a similar question, but not the question, because he started talking about the testing. And I'll grant you, PBS NewsHour guy did mention testing, but he also mentioned something like a financial commitment to paying all of those things. And weirdly, the CEO of Norfolk Southern forgot about that part and just talked about the testing they're doing. Oopsie, I'm sure he'll return to it because they do feel a deep and abiding financial commitment to the well-being of the people of East Palestine going forward.
You're noticing how a lot of people are complaining and talking about Democrats, the Biden administration. They're lying to us about the air and the water and everything there. But previous to that, when people were complaining about air and water issues, specifically around minority communities, I think it was maybe specifically some Fox News hosts were talking about how, well, I can't believe you guys are complaining about these things. We care about air and water, and they gave no examples of it. But in this particular case, they can use this politically. So of course, they're using it politically. If using it politically, that means you have to only attack the other side. Have you heard any of these conservative politicians or any of these pundits talking about the rail company and this CEO, first off, dodging the citizens, those white citizens that they explicitly point out? Now that it's coming for white folks, it's this government is going to ignore them. I think it was Charlie Kirk that said that, maybe even Tucker Carlson.
So oh, basically, all of them.
So when the CEO doesn't show up and gives these white citizens the middle finger, do you start coming after the CEO? Do you point out that they paid off politicians to under-regulate them so that accidents like this are more likely to happen? And then when they do happen, they don't show up and they toss maybe $1,000 at people and say, isn't that good enough for you? You guys are poor folks. Doesn't that work out for you? Have you come after the rail companies yet? The reasons that they haven't is because if people start looking into that and then other people look further, they'll understand that this is all coordinated with politicians that have been bought off. And then when they get mad about that, they might say, hey, maybe we shouldn't allow corporations to buy off politicians. Then the whole house of cards falls down, because even their supporters will realize the people that say they support and represent them are effing liars.
Yeah, it's amazing. Like if you're a conservative that is watching this right now, which you probably aren't, but if you are, and you've liked all of the, like, they're doing a race war on the white people with this, isn't it weird that all those people, Charlie Kirk and Tucker Carlson, all them, don't care at all about the company that did the race war, supposedly? No, it's all in the EPA. You know, the people who did not own the company, the train, anything like that. Isn't that weird? It's almost as if this is a convenient aside, an attack against the Biden administration while allowing the same sort of conditions to continue. And if that means more train derailments, whatever. Like, but really, incentives wise, why wouldn't they want that? If that happens again, then they can do the race war thing again. Like, why would they want the derailments to stop if stopping them meant that corporations would temporarily have to invest in more safety measures? Why would they actually want that? Anyway, I do want to let you know, though, you know, regardless of this massive attempt at PR that we're seeing right now, the EPA is saying that they're taking over, and the full EPA, not, you'll notice, the Ohio EPA that he keeps talking about. And they all are also saying that the cleanup will be financially put on the shoulders of Norfolk Southern, which is good. And weird that it's necessary. Weird that they would have to order Norfolk Southern to do that, considering how devoted to the people Norfolk Southern is. In any event, is one of the topics we need to get to, and it has to do with lobbying against safety rules that Norfolk Southern and other train companies have done historically. Let's take a look at that.
A question about rail safety, because in November and December, Norfolk Southern met with federal regulators and pushed back against this proposed rule that would have, in most cases, mandated at least two crew members on trains. Why did Norfolk Southern spend so much money, millions upon millions of dollars, lobbying against it?
What we're really interested in is solution-based safety rules. And we're very focused on following the science. And with respect to this accident, the National Transportation Safety Board, as you know, they're in charge of this investigation. And I'm very much looking forward to their results of their investigation. Once we have that, we're going to sit down and we're going to figure out, you know, what we could have done better.
Man, that guy's like shockingly bad at this. Why did you dispatch him to do this? Was there no one else? Maybe there isn't anyone else. If they think that two people is too many for a train, maybe two executives is too much for a company. Maybe he is literally the only person in management. I just love his, I just want solutions based. I'm really excited for the results, because when the results come, presumably this conversation will be over. Okay. I guess I feel like we're asking you important questions, buddy, about you spending millions of dollars to save a little bit of money in salary and benefits to just a second person on a mile and a half long train. You think that's excessive? Is that not following the science? But please, please, Alan Shaw, do more of these interviews. I am begging of you.
Well, the good news for him is he did on PBS, where people who would
I know.
I believe all the BS we'll never watch.
That's true. I'll take the wind out of my sails, JR Jackson. Get this guy on. You know what? Can we get him on our show, actually? I want to talk to him.
Imagine anyway. The questions if he goes on Fox News. Let's just imagine.
Oh, God, no. Like, is Michael S. Regan devoted to poisoning every white boy? Anyway, that is unfortunately all the time we have for that sort of talk in the first hour of the show. Thank you everyone for watching live. There is more show to come in the aftermath, though. If you're listening to the podcast, extra clips from the latter half hour of the show go up on our YouTube page. So definitely check those out. We'll see all of you after this. Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.